We live in a marvelous time, don't we? For getting information. There is so much information that is available to us that it's difficult, at least for me, to manage it all. Oh, for the good old days, right? When we only had three television stations. They went off the air at midnight and did not start again until, what, 6 or 7 in the morning? Life was simple then. We all got to watch I Love Lucy, The Three Stooges, Walter Cronkite, and that was when Winston cigarettes tasted good, like cigarettes should. Was it a conspiracy? Was there collusion? That tobacco companies knew that cigarettes were not only addictive, but they also caused lung and heart disease, resulting in near certain early death for smokers? It took the better part of, what, 50 years to discover that the answer was a loud and a resounding, uh-huh. We discovered as a nation that businesses were willing to lie about serious health issues involved with their products in order that we, the public, would buy them unaware in order for huge profits to be made. They purposefully lied and paid huge amounts to politicians to slow down investigations in order to make as much money as possible for as long as they could, willingly, purposefully, killing people with their product and by dragging out access to the truth of the information that they had available. Today we know better. Finally, but despite our best efforts, about what, 13% of our country of people still smoke, so we tax them. And we subsidize so many things with tax revenue, which nearly guarantees that legislators will never take more serious steps to eradicate smoking because it's a huge cash cow. And the same with other stuff like gambling. We just tax it, and things that we should be paying for with regularity, we just take it out of gambling revenue. This is all spilling out of me in relationship to today's scripture story about David and Bathsheba. David is confronted by the prophet Nathan, who tells David a rather simple story to lead David to acknowledge David's sin. David has used his power, his privilege, to seduce, to rape Bathsheba, and then to practice deceit, and finally to murder, to have someone else murder Bathsheba's husband Uriah. David conspired. There was collusion with others, and a good man, Uriah, was killed so that David could have what David wanted. This is such a phenomenal story about the personal talents and abilities that often give rise to leadership that are so instrumental to their success and that too often, too easily, are then used to create messes of ugly, unbelievable magnitudes. Most of us in progressive circles, however, do not like the interpretation that follows this story. David is forgiven. But the text says that God kills the child born to that union between David and Bathsheba, and that justice for the sins of David will follow his family for generations to come. God did not kill David and Bathsheba's son. The child died, and we don't know why, but it is a fairly common rationalization that happens, that people blame God in such circumstances. What is also not uncommon is that family structures, like that of David's, like mine, do create multi-generational dysfunctions. A God of love does not kill, period, no add-ons. Nor does God punish children. The way we live our lives can be deadly, and what we teach our children can have negative generational impact every bit as powerfully as can the good that we teach our children. Collusion is a concept that is just so alive in our political days that we live in. And what is so important, I think, to pay attention to is that when we fail to deal well with our personal lives as well as our political ones, we are colluding with the future we will be living and leaving to our children and their lives. Are we living in perilous times that will cause us to need to choose whose we are? Because I am a child of World War II, the scenario of my life has been framed around asking what would I be doing if I were a person of faith during the rise of Nazi Germany. In graduate school, we studied and we were asked to ponder the life's work and dedication of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who preached and led both public and private actions to destabilize the political power base of Adolf Hitler. We were asked to consider how a nation such as the United States of America, with Lady Liberty standing out in New York Harbor, how we could turn away a boatload of Jews seeking refuge from Hitler. And most of my adult years, the answer has been, well, we wouldn't do that today. We know better. Today, I realize we don't. And that some things are happening all over again, just like before. In fact, this question, who we would have been in Nazi Germany, has an incredibly, I think, easy answer. Who would you have been had you lived during this historical era of evil and injustice? What would you have done? Well, you'd be the person you are now, right? You would have done what you're doing now. It's easy to sit and push back saying, nope, those two things are not the same. And while I agree that Hitler's comparisons and calling people Nazis is overplayed in today's parlance, the era we find ourselves in is eerily similar. And yes, who you would have been during the rise and the rule of the Third Reich, and what you have done to stop the injustices and atrocities committed against the innocent is exactly who you are today. It's also exactly what you're doing now. I just think we are the people that we are. And we have to remember that Hitler didn't begin by building gas chambers. Like the old analogy of a frog in a pot that slowly heats up until it's too late to jump out, the road that paved the way to gas chambers was much more incremental, subtle, socially palatable, seemingly justified, and easily ignored, both to those within Germany and without. It all started with a nation who felt their glory days were over, who worried that their economy was in trouble, and along came a leader who connected with those who were scared, angry, nostalgic for the past. This new leader promised to fix the economy. He was determined to rebuild their military. He convinced the masses that he would make Germany great again. And they caved into their fears. And they bought into his vision, probably never imagining it would one day end in death camps. And getting to that point happened slowly and in ways that few seem to challenge or find too objectionable. He'd call the media fake news in a move that would later make it easy to deny what was really happening. He blamed their problems on Jewish immigrants, who he called viruses and leeches, and claimed that they were destroying the economy. And eventually, the masses of scared, angry white people, individuals who probably would have objected to the idea of death camps at the onset of his rule, had been subtly convinced that Jews were leeches who were getting in the way of making Germany great again, so they turned a blind eye to some evils, and they actively participated themselves and others. And those people not only ended up on the wrong side of history, they were lulled into collectively committing one of the most evil acts the world has ever known, And those who stood up at the end stood up too late, because the battle should not have been waged at death camps. It should have been waged when the foundations were being laid down. The foundation upon which death camps were built began with unchecked nationalistic pride, nostalgia for the past, promises to make Germany great again, accusations that the media was fake news, and speech after speech that blamed Germany's problems on immigrants who were killing the economy. And by the time there was actual building erected on that foundation, it was too late. So who would you have been during Nazi Germany? What would you have done? Would you have been on the right side of history, or complicit on the road to horrific evil? And I don't need you to answer that question, because I already know the answer for myself. We would have been exactly who we are. And what you would have done, what I am doing, is probably what we're doing today. I think it's past time that we stopped colluding with the lazy affair attitudes that this time too in history will pass without our doing anything. We are men and women who are servants of the way of Jesus. The wall says our master, who calls us to be bold, to be brilliant, to be believable alternatives, to exist as a church and as faithful individuals who do not collude, but who always go out of our way to stand for justice, reason, and the spirit of loving kindness, especially for those who cannot stand for themselves. If in the end, as in David's story, where Nathan says, "You're the man," I think we need to be found as we are the women and we are the men who stood for all the alternatives according to the way of Jesus of Nazareth.